The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we have a very special guest on the phone over the oceans, over the land, up there in Sacramento, California. His name is Brian Ward. At the moment, he's working as a call center analyst, and you say to me, why, Richard, have you got a call center analyst here on Columbia Calling? Well, actually, Brian has a background in Columbia, and in fact, it's an incredibly interesting one because it sort of has to do with relationships and work and renting and all of the issues that come together when you are spending time in Columbia, let's say. And I know now, because I've read the book, he's written a book about his experiences, about his experiences here in Bogota, in Colombia, in Cartagena, and Villa de Leyva, because he traveled a bit too. It's entitled 48 Million Colombians Can't Be Wrong, Finding Love in the Land of Shakira, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Fernando Botero, and Sofia Vergara. So, Brian, welcome on Columbia Calling. Thank you for agreeing to speak to us.
Thank you, Richard. This is I never expected to get to this level where I'm speaking to you on a talk show here.
Well, I think it's very flattering to be called a talk show. It's a very minor show, but we have our audience out there, and you know, people want to hear about Columbia and people want to know about what's going on. So you are a valuable interviewee on this show. Now, I want to ask, so you've written a book, but you've written books prior to this. Who is Brian Ward, and why did you end up in Columbia?
Good question, Richard. All my life, my father, he went on all these adventures. He was actually a roadie for the Grateful Dead. He had, you know, my father done it all. He used to work constructions. He's fallen down elevator shafts and lived to tell about it. So my father has had this really exciting life of all these different stuff he's done. So I kind of got, you know, I got inspired by my father and my grandmother mostly. And my grandmother actually paid for my ticket to go to Costa Rica when I was in high school. She had asked me, what do you want for your graduation from high school? I said, a TV would be fine, you know, remote control if you can. And she ended up getting me a ticket to Costa Rica, and I stayed with a family she had known down there because she was taking classes in Spanish, and she liked the teacher so much, she just decided, well, maybe I can stay with the family of this teacher, and then I can learn Spanish a little better. So she ended up moving in with this family in Costa Rica, the Ortiz family. And then when she came back, she said, well, you got to go down there. And so I went down to Costa Rica, you know, and the last conversation I had with my grandmother was before I went down there was, you know, I'm flying down there today. How are they going to recognize me in the airport? She said, you'll be the only white 17-year-old unaccompanied that's landing probably in the airport today. They'll pick you up just fine. Don't worry. And then from there, it was an incredible experience I had because the two sons were about my age, and they loved listening to Nirvana, Guns N' Roses. They loved playing ping pong, and they loved Legend of Zelda. So it was just there was no cultural barriers at all. You know, first day, you want to go play Legend of Zelda? Perfect. Let's go do that. And then it just turned out to be like really close friends really quick. And that kind of kicked it off for me for the rest of my journeys after that.
Awesome. So it started off in Costa Rica. Well, let's wind back slightly, though, because, you know, you said something so interesting about your father being a roadie for the Grateful Dead. It's got to be really hard to live up to those kind of stories.
Yeah. My father, he has, you know, he has all these stories about, you know, partying with Jerry Garcia. He's got all these just kind of bizarre. There's one story he tells where he's in the car with eight people. You know, they're partying after one of the concerts. They run into a cop car, and then as everyone's getting pulled out of the cop car, my old man fakes like he has a back injury. So instead of going to jail, he goes to the hospital, and the rest of the guys in the car ended up getting taken away to jail. So he's got, you know, there's millions of these stories, but he did join Alcoholics Anonymous. So he kind of, in that light, he tries not to, like, glorify it or anything like that, but he does. So about 95% of the stories he can't tell if they involve alcohol, but there are some, you know, that he will tell. So definitely really inspired by my father and his adventure.
He's a survivor. It's a survivor of an era.
Oh, yeah. The ultimate survivor.
Excellent. Well, yeah, but wow. I mean, incredible. But it all started off, let's say, in Costa Rica, and really it was down to your grandmother. And then from Costa Rica, I mean, well, I've obviously I do my investigations before coming into an interview of this nature and so on. And I know that you've written two other books. You Wake Me Up When I'm Rich, The South Beach Guide to Impressing People. Now that's in South Beach, Florida, if I'm not mistaken. That's a long way from California.
Yeah.
And also there's First Contact in Korea, a Native English Teacher's Journey into the Backwoods of South Korea. So and also, hang on, there's Single Abroad, Confessions of a Boyish Man. You've traveled.
Oh, yeah. They're kind of the books, the only time I'm ever able to kind of sit down and focus and write is when I'm traveling. When I'm at home, I really don't get that inspired to really write anything. So anytime I'm on the road, whether it be South Korea, I went to South Korea about 4.5 years ago, and I just got this job as an English teacher in South Korea, and signed a contract, scanned it, and then sent it off to Korea. And supposedly I was going to be teaching high school students at a private academy. And I remember showing up for my first day of work, and they showed me, okay, this is your classroom. And I noticed that the chairs were only like a foot off the ground. And I said, well, you know, the high school students, are they really short in Korea? Or, you know, do they sit on the floor? Why are the chairs so small for these high school students? And they said, no, you've been reassigned. You're now going to be teaching elementary students. And I said, okay, you know, this is an hour before, you know, the first class about to start. So, okay, you know, elementary students, that's fine. And then I remember the principal left, and the kids started coming in the classroom, and a little girl comes up to me, you know, really cute little girl, maybe like 8 years old. And she says to me, teacher, I yesterday know. And I said, what? She said, I yesterday know. And I said, wait a second. I don't understand what you're saying. Let me go get another Korean teacher and let me see what you're trying to say here. So I walk, kind of take the girl by the hand, but she didn't understand why I wasn't understanding. I took her by the hand, and then I went to talk to a Korean teacher and said, you know, say what you said to me in Korean. And she said, oh, and then the other teacher translated and said, oh, the student was trying to say I wasn't here yesterday. Oh, okay. You know,
okay.
That makes sense. You know.
It does make sense.
That,
I mean,
yeah. So I said, okay, you know, I can follow that logic, you know. And then it was just one of those kind of like experiences you cannot prepare for in the least. So it just became, every day became a little more like these misunderstandings kind of escalated, you know, the first day was, you know, and so, but I ended up lasting a year there, and I really, the people I met in Korea, they're really similar to the Colombian people, really easy people to get along with. You become friends with them very quickly, and they're like a party kind of people, like the Colombian people, you know, going out at night, doing all kinds of stuff. So yeah, it is a great, great country to visit. I really recommend it. It's, you know, Colombia and Korea are my two favorite places to visit.
Excellent. But I mean, I would say then you're a journeyman are you originally from California, from Chico?
Well, originally from Santa Cruz, California.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was in like grade school and elementary school and high school, basically I moved around pretty much every year or every 2 years. So by the time I got to high school, I probably lived in like 7 or 8 different places. But, okay. You know, it's a great way to prepare you to travel because, you know, you have to start over and you have to meet new people. So I think probably that was another thing in my life that kind of helped me adjust to, you know, different cultures.
And so then what brought you to Colombia? Let's get onto the Colombian section of this. What brought you down here all those years ago?
Well, I originally I came to Colombia, I think, in 2007. I had purchased a ticket to Quito, Ecuador. It was the cheapest ticket I could find that was leaving the country. So I got that ticket to Quito, and the whole time I was in Ecuador, I was thinking, I got to go to Colombia. And so I would get on buses, and I would go north towards Colombia, and I would get scared. And then I would turn back twice on my way by bus to Colombia. I turned back twice, and then on the third time, I met this couple. It was a Canadian and a Japanese woman, and they spoke. Basically spoke no Spanish, and they kind of like begged me, oh, can you just go up with us and kind of translate and just get us to Bogota? I said, all right, you know, that sounds good. And so as we were crossing the border over to Colombia, the Canadian guy tells me, you know, what about mushrooms? Can I take mushrooms into Colombia? I said, oh my God. I had this like freak out moment. This is like 10 minutes before we're about to cross the border into Colombia. And I said, You gotta flush that stuff, get rid of it. I don't want to know anything about it. I don't want to be near it. And then, so I said, I'm gonna get in line in front of you guys, and you know, I'm not gonna talk to you at all until we get through this. So his wife finally flushed the stuff, and then so went up, and I was like, oh, I made it through. You know, didn't get thrown in jail, anything like that. And so finally ended up, you know, taking this couple up. They're a real nice couple. The Canadian guy actually duct taped his wallet to the inside of his knee, and he had a fanny belt underneath. He had three places to put his money. He had a fanny belt underneath his pants and his wallet duct taped to his knee. So he was really kind of like really getting a little bit this was a really kind of emotional kind of trip for him. But, you know, we got through. Nothing happened, and ended up to me having – I had the best time ever in Bogota. Ended up just staying there for about 2 months. And then always wanted to come back. And then basically 5 years later, I went on Colombia Cupid and just started chatting with a few people and a few girls in Bogota. Ended up coming back 5 years later and having a great time.
Excellent. So about 2012, you came back after your first sortie here in 2007. I want to say that I want to just get out to the listeners out there. We do not condone the use of any illegal substances, and it's got to be just. I mean, how stupid can anyone be approaching a border, you know? Let alone, you know, getting involved in whatever illicit substances, but it's, approaching a border with mushrooms and thing, and then asking, you know, a complete stranger, basically, is like, do you think we can get across with this? Yeah. I mean, it's just there's lunacy. Have you seen the inside of a Latin American jails? I mean, jails in general are not places you want to be, but a Colombian one or an Ecuadorian one, I have actually visited an Ecuadorian one. They're not nice places.
Yeah, it's really not anything you want to be messing with in any country, really. But
I mean, most this of guy, all, yeah. He was so. He duct taped his wallet to the inside of his knee. I mean, that's fear.
Yeah, he was he. You know, really kind of a soft spoken guy. Really interested in traveling and all the culture and everything, but just shaken to the core, basically, about, you know, doing these different things and just to take the added risk, just to put more risk on it and you know, to involve any kind of like psychotropics or anything like that. That's just nothing I want to be involved in. But, you know, it's just these experiences you have, I guess, traveling, you don't really, you're never going to be in any kind of comfort zone. And all these experiences, they push you out of your comfort zone, and they make you like a stronger, more interesting person. So, you know, if you survive it, you know, it's all the better.
Well, this is why we do travel, you know, in a big sense to leave our comfort zone, and whether people know it or not. I mean, that's part of the joy of it. But anyway, rather than digress about that, we're gonna take a short break though, and we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk more about your experiences from 2012 onwards, which have led to this, to the writing of this novel, The 48 Million Colombians Can't Be Wrong, and I do believe it's available on Amazon now, so I will link it onto the Facebook site and everything else. I have read it, and it did make me laugh at several points. So there you go. That's I'm a pretty humorless person, so there you go. It made me laugh in a couple of points. But anyway, we're talking to Brian Ward, who's up there in Sacramento, California at the moment, a very special guest here on Columbia Calling. If you want to get in touch, please, that's columbiacalling@gmail.com. columbiacallingradio.com is our website. We're on Facebook and on Twitter, as you can imagine, Columbia Calling. We'll be right back after this short break with Brian Ward in Sacramento, California. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, talking to Brian Ward in Sacramento, California. We're talking about, well, his experiences traveling, really. That's what we started with. But the reason he's on the show is because he's written a book called 48 Million Colombians Can't Be Wrong, Finding Love in the Land of Shakira, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Fernando Botero, and Sofia Vergara. And Brian, I mean, you found love. You found love, but it wasn't without its problems to begin with. I mean, I wanted to talk about this a little bit because, you know, a lot of people come down here and you do see, you know, I am one of these guys. You know, I am now married to a Colombian. I have a child, like half English, half Colombian. I know lots of other, Anglo or Colombian couples, Franco-Colombian couples, Italian-Colombian, whatever. But you are now, you're married to Carrie, who's from Cartagena. But as they say, the course of true love never runs smoothly. And you started sort of chatting to women on the Colombian Cupid page. This is what I read in your book.
Yes. I had basically I just heard of this site. I don't even remember how I even got to going on the site, but I just heard about it and I decided to check it out. And it's, you know, it's a real kind of like cool site. There's a lot of things going on this site, and there's a lot of women to chat with. And so I just, you know, I paid whatever it was, $25, and I started just chatting with a few different women down in Colombia. And Kari, which I had only I'd probably sent a total of 4 emails to her before coming down to Colombia. And I think the last email was, oh, yeah, I got my ticket. I'm going to be coming down in about a week or two. She said, thanks for your message. And I said, well, that's kind of like not the greatest start, but, you know, I got the ticket anyway, so I got to go through with this thing. And I got down to Colombia, and Kari was not available. I was calling and sending emails. She said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm with my daughter. I can't tonight, whatever. And so I ended up going on a few different dates. And the first date is in the book. It was a woman I had met, and her, according to the website, her name was Diana. I called, and it was her friend's telephone, and I said, oh, is Diana there? No, this is Adriana. My friend Diana's real name is Lorena. And I said, oh, okay. And so I said, is she interested in going out, you know, having lunch or something like that? She said, yeah, of course we are. Oh, okay. So yeah, so I got a date with 2 girls here, so... we ended up meeting in Plaza de las Periodistas there in Candelaria, and just went on like a walking tour. And then we ended up going to this restaurant, which was really like a fancy restaurant right across from the Botero Museum. And they started ordering appetizers and beers, and I start calculating how much this meal is going to cost. And I said, oh, this is too much for me. So it got to the point, you know, we're talking like not really expensive, but, you know, U.S. $80 meal, something like that. And so as all the stuff's coming to the table, I'm thinking, I don't have money for this. And then the girl that I was actually on the date with supposedly was chatting. She took her cell phone and she was chatting on the balcony, wasn't even talking at all. And I ended up talking to her friend the whole time. And her friend kept asking to borrow my cell phone. And she was making calls on my cell phone. I'm thinking, this is, you know. Finally, the other girl said to me, basically, if you don't like my friend, you can choose me. Huh. And then I got the hint that this was like, I guess the other girl was the intermediary, and I was supposed to be going out with her friend, which, you know, she was about 15 years older. And, you know, so I kind of got, you know, this was a cattle call kind of thing. I kind of got the feeling that this was not going the way I had planned. So basically, I grabbed my cell phone, grabbed my camera, and just asked to be excused to go to the restroom, and ended up just ditching out on the whole date. And, you know, as I was walking back to the hostel, I thought, well, they're probably going to call or something like that, and then I'm going to have to explain, you know, what happened. I just turned my cell phone off, went back to the hostel, the Sue hostel, which is my favorite hostel. Sue, numero dos, number two. I went back to the Sue hostel. I just, you know, clicked off the cell phone and never heard from either of them again. And then the next couple dates I ended up doing, I just would invite girls just to come and play ping pong at the Sue hostel. And so I did a couple of those kind of dates, you know, real nice people and everything, but nothing really clicked. And then probably about a month into being down there in the hostel, I got a call from Kari, and we ended up meeting up in the Parque Nacional in Bogota, which we met up at like 9 o'clock at night. And so it was kind of, she was in a taxi looking for me. I had just, I was on El Capo Dos. I was working as an extra on that. And I called her. Yeah, when we stopped filming. And so it was me, and there was a Korean guy who was also on Capo Dos. And so Kari pulled up in the taxi, and she saw two guys, which is reminiscent of the first date I was on, with two girls appeared. So now it's me on the other end, two guys appearing on the date. So, of course, that really freaked Kari out. And so we jumped in the taxi, and the taxi driver looked back. We were all three in the back seat, and the taxi driver looked in the rearview mirror at Kari and just said, I'll drive to the police station if you want me to. Just tell him, just let me know if these guys look a little dodgy. You know, I will, you know, if you want to, we'll just go straight to the police station. And I'm like, oh, man, this is not good.
Wow.
Yeah. And then kind of said, no, it's okay. It's okay. Just take us to the restaurant in Candelaria. So, you know, that was not, you know, not the most ambitious start for a date. And so we ended up going to an Israeli restaurant in Candelaria, and Kari was a little nervous about the food, so she didn't want to really have any food. So she just like drank a Coca-Cola while my Korean friend and I, we ate the shawarmas and had a couple beers and everything. And then after that, I walked Kari back to the Transmilenio. She went back home, and then surprisingly enough, I called her the next day, and she didn't reject me or anything. She said, "Yeah, we can meet up again." I thought, "Wow, this girl's gonna be." She's pretty cool. She could have taken me to the police station on the first date. She didn't do that. So, and then she, you know, kind of, you know, sat through a conversation between me and my Korean buddy for about 2 hours. So, you know, it wasn't the best first date, but she survived and she decided to go on another date. So it really worked out, you know, really worked out.
Well, you know, we've got to celebrate this, and you know, I think it's really interesting. I mean, there's a lot of information in that excerpt that you just spoke about. And moving back, and you found you let's say the first girls you met, this Diana, who was not Diana, who was in fact Lorena, and her friend Adriana. How did you know that these girls off Colombian Cupid were like trying to take you for a ride? How did you just kind of got a feeling?
Yeah, it was at the beginning that it seemed like. Like the girl who had the photo on the website, she was really disconnected, and it was really kind of like I got the feeling that she wasn't there because she wanted to, because something else was going on. Mm. So she was really kind of like distant, and she was talking on her phone and not really involved at all. So I got kind of an eerie feeling about that.
Okay.
And then when we went to this really expensive restaurant and her friend started ordering all this food, and then I got there was some news in the middle of the meal that. We're going to go across town to go watch a soccer game, you know, in a place I never heard of. And I said, oh, this is kind of getting a little weird here.
Yeah.
So I kind of just pulled the plug, you know, could have been something totally innocent, but I just got kind of a weird feeling about the whole thing. And, you know, just kind of skipped out. And, you know, I feel bad for kind of doing that. But it was when you are in a foreign country, you do have to kind of be a little more cautious.
And of course, it's the whole game of online dating too. I mean, you do have to come into this with a little bit of apprehension, a little bit of awareness. I mean, that's the truth of it. You don't know who you're going to be meeting. And that's why, I mean, that's, you know, let's give the girls at this moment the benefit of the doubt. That's why, you know, she turned up with a friend maybe for security reasons. And then they saw, I mean, I'm looking at you here across the camera, and you know, you don't look like a you know, a particularly violent person. You don't look dangerous. That's my feeling. But equally the same, it's your gut feeling. You were in the restaurant, something was going on, so you left. I mean, so talking about this website, what would your advice be to anyone out there, you know, who's considering signing up? What would you say to them?
I would just, you know, I would just, the best thing you can do is, I would say go chat with the person on Skype so you can kind of verify the identity, because they can put, anybody can put any kind of photo up there. Yeah. And if you do, you know, if it is obviously like a supermodel photo where, you know, she's like parachuting out of a castle or something like, if it's obviously a really kind of like a professional photo, and you can kind of get a clue about those kind of things. So. Yeah. Yeah, and if it's a photo of somebody who's like wearing really revealing clothing or something like that, you can sniff out probably from looking at the photo, you can probably sniff out like 90% of, you know, it might be a scam or something like that. And then just chatting with the person on Skype, you can see the person on the video, you can verify that is the same person in the photo. And then I would just, when you chat with the person, if the person is just giving you like 2 or 3 word answers when you ask questions and stuff like that, or they'll redirect it to you. If it's, oh, you know, tell me about your family, they'll say something. Oh, I have a big family, tell me about yours. If it's these kind of like short answers and they redirect it towards you, then you can know that it's something's a little fishy. But there really was a lot of funny stories I heard of just chatting with girls about, you know, tell me about a funny experience you had. And then I had girls writing me about stories about them falling down at weddings when they were walking their friends to the aisles and stuff like that. So there was a lot of, you know, a lot of real funny kind of stories. And it was really, it's a real kind of cool place just to meet people and everything. And it's just like dating any other kind of date, whether you meet somebody at a movie theater or wherever, you still got to have that little bit of caution in the back of your mind and just kind of, you know, take it slow and, you know, and just see how the thing goes. But I think it's a really cool way to kind of, if you're only going to be in Bogota for 2 weeks, obviously it's nice if you can just chat a little bit before you get down there, or Medellin or Cartagena, chat. You can have somebody to kind of show you around. And so it is really a great opportunity, I feel, to kind of get to know people if you're only going to be in it for a short time.
Well, of course, it was a success story for you because you met Carrie and you're now married. You're married to a girl from Cartagena.
Yeah, it was. I didn't have the most ambitious start, but we ended up going to El Corral in Suba about 3 or 4 times, and then after that, Carrie asked me, "Oh, you know, would you like to move a little farther in the north of Bogota?" And I said, "Great, you know, that sounds good." So she. Within about a month of meeting her, she found a place in her apartment complex for me to live. Hmm. So I lived with 2 Colombians, and they were same age as me, Carlos and Viviana, real friendly people, nice people. And so I moved in with them, and, you know, didn't have any furniture, bought a mattress. I think I paid $225 U.S. at Plaza Imperial for this mattress, you know, threw it down. You know, I had my place, and, you know, I was like, I was official after I bought that mattress, you know.
That's right, you're a permanent. But before we get onto the love story and so on, I mean, you spent a considerable amount of time here, and you mentioned it earlier. You know, you went to meet up with Carrie, with a Korean guy who was also an extra in El Capo Dos. How did you, because I do know of a lot of people who fall into this of being extras in soap operas here and so on. How did you fall into that? How do you end up being in one of the most viewed soap operas in, you know, like Colombian history?
Yeah. It is a weird, it's a kind of a, you just get in this kind of circuit. Whereas you stay at the Sue hostel. Yeah. And they'll come and recruit you directly out of the hostel. So you'll just wake up one morning, there'll be a guy in the lobby, and he'll just point at you. Do you want to work today? You know, okay, sure. You know, it's 100,000 pesos for a day's work. So usually you'll be like the fourth shadow on the jury normally. But every once in a while, they'll give you like a speaking part. I knew a German guy, Rudiger Kuntz, who speaks no English, just learned Spanish kind of when he came to Colombia, and he's just turned into like, he's a superstar now in Colombia. He is like, he does every, he's been in Locked Up Abroad, he's been on all the main, you know, Capo Dos, all
those.
That's
so funny.
He's done Prepago, he's done all those,
yeah.
And that's how he basically makes his living. And he's been doing it for like 5 or 6 years, and he became an agent, so he'll recruit. So he recruits you now. So you add him on Facebook, and anything comes along, he'll kind of shoot you an email. And he's really kind of the most, probably the strangest German person I've ever met in my life, but really that kind of like a real good guy. He looks after. He doesn't just send you to these random places. He'll go. If it's like an audition, he'll go and he'll actually show up to you, to the audition with you, even though he's not auditioning, kind of give you a background and everything.
Yeah, so that sounds right. You know, it sounds legitimate. And that's interesting. You mentioned a couple of things there. Locked Up Abroad, a few interviews ago, I was interviewing the production company here who filmed that in Colombia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's an Anglo-Colombian couple. He's English, she's Colombian, and they actually met in London. But he's a producer, and then they came back over, and they've got all the equipment, and they're very, very successful now here, doing all of the filming for those kind of shows here. They do it in Ecuador, but they live in Colombia, but they do it in Colombia too. I mean, so very, you know, the circle is small when you think about this. And you're talking obviously about the hostel Sway. Oscar, the owner, is a good friend of mine, so he's now in charge of like the tourism cluster of businesses in the Candelaria. He's a mover and shaker there, and he sold up one and a half of the hostel, the original one.
Okay. Yeah, there are two different ones that are about a block away.
Yeah, the second one you're talking about with the ping pong table is the one he still owns, the better one.
that's kind of like ground zero as far as like tourists. That's like the it's pretty much a tourist attraction. You know, if you're in any country in South America, you hear about this hostel. Yeah, you know, I didn't know anything about it. Somebody in Ecuador told me this is the place you got to go.
Yeah.
So I just kind of got in that circuit, and it turned out to be really the best hostel I've been. I've been in a lot of different places in Argentina and in Europe and Ecuador. And in the Sue, the first time I went there, they actually, for my birthday, they made me a cake, and it was, you know, cool. Yeah, it was really, really nice people. They're still, you know, it's still the same people as it always has been. And they're really, it's kind of like you become part of the family when you stay at that hostel.
Excellent. Well, it's good to hear that from a different source than Oscar, because he'll of course tell me that, but you know, he's the owner. And also you write for the City Paper with Richard Amblin. I am an editorial. I write opinion pieces for him.
Excellent. Yeah, I was gonna ask you if you had met Richard. Richard. When I got into writing and everything, so I just decided to send him an email, and I sent Richard an email, and then he said, "Yeah, just come to my house." I was like, "Okay, you know, that's cool, you know, all right." So ended up showing up at Richard's house, you know, took the elevator, went to his house, you know, sat on the couch, you know, here's some coffee, and you know, "Did you study journalism in college?" "No, I didn't." He said, "Me neither." "Good, perfect, you know, that's a good sign." And then he says, "Well, we're gonna interview this Irish guy in about, you know, 10 minutes. You want to come? You want to interview this guy?" "Sure. You know, all right. You know, let's go."
Excellent.
So we drove over to this other guy's house, and I mentioned him in the book. I actually changed his name in the book because I didn't want to, I didn't want to involve him in the book if he didn't want to be. So we ended up going to interview the guy in the book, and in the book I call him Michael Donnelly. So we're interviewing him, and this is the first question, you know, "What's your name?" "Michael Donnelly." And I get my Sharpie out, and I say, "Michael," and I spell it Donnelly. "No, that's not right." And he spells it to me, and then I spell it again, Donnelly. "No, that's not right." And I'm just like, this is my first interview, and I can't even spell the guy's name. So finally, he grabs a pen, he grabs the paper, and he writes his name out. The full name out. I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir." So it wasn't the most, you know, not the most ambitious start either with Richard. You know, the first interview, I couldn't even write the guy's name down correctly. But Richard rolled with it and ended up doing that interview. I got to meet Dr. Raul Cuero, who is he's a real famous biologist from Buenaventura, who lives now in Texas. Got to meet him and did a feature article about Dr. Cuero, who after doing the interview, he said, "Do you need anything else?" And he says, "Do you want my books?" I said, "Okay, sure, you know." So he says, "Write me down your address in Bogota." I wrote it down, and he sent me to my house the next day. He sent me his two books. The one I really like is Between Survival and Triumph. Really great book about him, you know, growing up in Buenaventura. His brother actually died because he got kicked in the shin with a metal soccer cleat. And, you know, he has this story about having to really kind of like his only toys in life. Where he played with cockroaches in his house, and that was his only form of entertainment. But then he became one of the most famous microbiologists in Colombia, pretty much. And then, you know, ended up getting out of Buenaventura, and then went to the United States to further his studies. And now he's got a couple of different institutions in different countries who kind of recruit young people to get into that kind of those kind of fields. So. Really great guy, and a lot of positive stories coming out of Colombia that really not really well publicized, but there are a lot of these kind of these stories about really overcoming the odds.
It's interesting, you know, because I mean, when you think about it, I mean, you're talking about this doctor, you're thinking about the interviews you got to do, the film extras, you met your wife. Colombia has been very good to you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean, you have to think about it. And obviously, you've written this book as well. I'll just repeat it out there for those who may have forgotten, but it's called 48 Million Colombians Can't Be Wrong, Finding Love in the Land of Shakira, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Fernando Botero, and Sofia Vergara. What made you choose those examples of Colombian culture? Just quickly off the top of my head.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Richard. So those are basically when, kind of like when you're associating things you think about in Colombia, I really like, for me, Shakira is number one. That's, you know, she's the person that when I associate the most with Colombia. But of course, there are all these other people like Gabriel Garcia Marquez, the late Gabriel Garcia Marquez, you know, all the, you know, Nobel winning prize winner, Fernando Botero, one of my favorite painters. And then, of course, Sofia Vergara, one of the most beautiful actresses, one of the most highest grossing actresses. So there are all these kind of like all these people who come out of Colombia that are really kind of really important people in the world. And it's interesting when you go to the Bogota airport and you see that kind of mural, and it's all the kind of the famous people of Colombia who now live in Monaco, who now live in the United States and wherever. And it's real kind of like, wow, you know, this country is really producing all these kind of people. And so, Colombia is, in my opinion, you know, could be the next superpower out of South. Of course, Brazil is the one that's getting, you know, doing the business now. But, you know, I think Colombia is on a kind of a
it's on an upwards trajectory. That's
going
the truth.
In that direction.
But Brazil's in all sorts of economic troubles. But Colombia, we're wobbling a little bit, but it's stable, which is good stuff. But I mean, fascinating to hear this, and all of this, of course, is detailed in your book, and it's available on Amazon. What does it retail for, Brian?
The paperback is $9.99, and then the e-copy, which is basically the Kindle edition, is $2.99. So
incredibly
cheap. For a
lot
of people, yeah, the Kindle is really kind of taken over a little bit, so there is that option. Grab it on Kindle too.
And who would you say that your book would appeal to? Let's give you a good marketing push here at the end of the show.
I would say any person who's kind of interested in kind of exploring different avenues in life. If you're just the armchair traveler. That, you know, you may be divorced and living in the United Kingdom, but you may want to, you know, you may want to hear about a guy who went to Colombia who met this woman online and had a great adventure about, you know, becoming a celebrity in Colombia, minor celebrity. And I would just say anybody who's kind of interested in kind of seeing how a life abroad, how it can change you and the opportunities you have in different countries, which, of course, there are so much can be done in Colombia. If you're a Colombian or, more importantly, a foreign person, you really have all these kind of opportunities that you never would have living in your,
yes, this is true,
your own country. Yeah.
Well, listen, we've come to the end. That's the end of the show here, Brian. So I'd like to say thank you so much for your time and for sharing with us, you know, a little bit of your life. And of course, we'll help you promote the book. That's 48 Million Colombians Can't Be Wrong by Brian Ward. You can find that on Amazon, $9.99 paperback or $2.99 for the ebook copy. I've read it. I had a laugh about the problems with the Chilean renter. That was the part that I could just see. I have never rented to anyone here, but I could certainly see it happening, and I've heard of similar things. And of course, I did find it very interesting, and that's why we focused on the Colombian Cupid part as well, because I know a lot of people who are signed up for that. So, you know, words of warning, and of course, words of embracing other cultures too. So, Brian in Sacramento, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Richard. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and I wish you all the best of luck with this book, and of course, the best of luck with your continued marriage to Cari, the success story. You married the girl from Cartagena that you met here in Bogota. I mean, it's, you know, we like these stories. These are good news stories. You've been listening to me, Richard McCall, talking to Brian Ward up there in California and talking about his book and his experiences in Colombia. If you want to get in touch, please, you can do so through our website. That's ColombiaCallingRadio.com, the Facebook site, Columbia Calling, Twitter, etc. And of course, Gmail, ColombiaCalling@gmail.com. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Columbia Calling. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Don't forget to tune in next week. Thank you again.